Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the fastest growing and most important, even the largest, segment of society, to those who are coming to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions, and not just those of the red communists in China or the Ruskies or those egotistical Europeans or party-happy Mexicanos, but everyone's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt. That they have become counterproductive and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. I appreciate the letters I received yesterday and again this morning from those of you who let us know that we did have an open mic on our commercial breaks. Now, you all know that I'm leaving on a roadie. I will going back to our farm in Virginia, I think you all now know that my wife wants me to stop in and have a Subway sandwich en route, since I am in the midst of a 3 month long diet. I hope we didn't gross you out beyond that.
Well, not everyone looks like turkey. I mean,
they found out that we find turkey boring. I did get a letter from one of my favorite people who said that you got to be careful with turkey around dogs, that they took their dog to a really fancy deli and gave their dog a part of a turkey sandwich and had a $600 vet bill in the immediate aftermath, and learned that turkey and dogs don't always go hand in hand. My dog, traditional celebration that my wife still insists in because of she's really into bringing family together, and I enjoy that as well, as we call it Turkey Day, and it happens to be my dog's favorite day on the calendar when that turkey goes to the oven in the morning, she will camp out all day in the kitchen in carving time, where there's scraps of turkey that make their way below countertop. That is my dog's favorite day on the annual calendar. You just say Turkey Day, and you can see her eyes light up. So I guess it's not all dogs that have that issue. And we did clearly indicate that we were going to be passing on the pork-based meals. So this is also a good thing. But we apologize for our lack of professionalism during the commercial break. The news out of the Netherlands is quite interesting. The Dutch, because the Malaysian flight had more Dutch citizens on it than any other that was shot down over the Ukraine, has been given the responsibility of investigating the crash. And I think part of that is because the Russians don't trust the Americans, and the Americans don't trust the Russians. But the Dutch prosecutors and it's interesting that it's Dutch prosecutors, not Dutch investigators. Quite interesting, because normally these kind of investigations are done by investigators, not prosecutors. But nonetheless, the Dutch prosecutors in the Malaysian Airlines crash believe that the aircraft may well have been shot down from the air, as opposed to hit from a surface-to-air missile. Now, I told you about a month ago when I was drawn to a series of articles. There were two articles, both of which indicated to me that the original evaluation of the evidence, which caused me to think that this was the Bok, which is beech, and it's the name of the beech tree, missile battery that had been taken from the Ukrainian military base in the Donetsk region and celebrated as being confiscated from the Donetsk military Ukrainian base, photographed in news periodicals as having been confiscated, that it was that missile battery that was errantly fired at the airliner by the Ukrainian rebels. That was my summation of the evidence that was presented to us, fully recognizing that the testimony that is considered audio testimony that was pirated by the Kiev regime cannot be trusted. Nothing that is said in Kiev can be trusted. They can't be trusted financially when they borrow money. They can't be trusted economically when they consume gas and sign gas deals. They can't be trusted racially when they bludgeon and create incredibly savage acts against Jews. They're the worst in the world, worse even than Muslims. The Ukrainians are in terms of their treatment of Jews. They can't be trusted in terms of politically as it relates to using thuggery on a regular basis to oust popular elected governments. They can't be trusted. So I discounted that, but still said that is the most likely scenario, that because the regime in Kiev was using aircraft to drop bombs, including cluster bombs. These are really sick individuals in Kiev. It's amazing that the West wants any part of them, but it's only because the West still thinks it's fighting the Cold War. Since the Kiev regime was using military aircraft to drop bombs, including cluster bombs on Luhansk and Donetsk, Luhansk and Donetsk, that the rebels trying to protect themselves mistook the civilian airliner for a military bomber and mistakenly shot it out of the air. That was my, you know, you review the evidence, that's the most likely scenario, and therefore it is an accident that was prompted by bad behavior on behalf of the Kiev regime. So even if the Russian separatists fired the Mach missile, the real culpability lies with the Kiev regime for flying military aircraft over civilian areas and dropping cluster bombs. You would expect the ethnic Russian rebels to be defending themselves. And they don't have air traffic control to be able to identify one aircraft from another. Now, I saw two, and I mentioned this leading into the story, that I saw two news stories, both of which that caused me to question that conclusion. Oh, one of them was the close-up photos of the external skin of the 777. It was not a case where you could see that a missile struck this airliner and blew it to smithereens. I mean, just go from flying and being an operative machine to being blown up in a in an instant. You know, the pictures that you see when you see a missile strike a military aircraft, all the war movies and the like. That's not what these pictures revealed. The focus panel on this one story showed a panel that was about 3 feet by 4 feet of the external skin of the aircraft, and it had probably 50 or more circular holes that were pierced into the aluminum skin. And the holes were all circular. There weren't any holes that were jagged. They weren't of a regular shape, none of them. They were all circular. And they were all had all pierced the skin of this aircraft. And I looked at that and said, that's not the result of a missile. That's the result of a machine gun. And it looked like the holes were about 50 caliber in diameter. And so it looked like, you know, the kind of 50 caliber machine guns that you put in either the nose of aircraft or that you would have in a anti-aircraft gun or just rapid-fire machine gun on the ground. In fact, you see them a lot of times in the Muslim rebel units where they take these side-by-side 50 cals and they strap them in the back of pickup trucks, and they can be used to bring down aircraft, but they're also used to indiscriminately kill people. That's what it looked like. Now, the second story that caused me to say, maybe there's a different explanation here, came by way of the another news report, which said that they found that one of the passengers had deployed their mask, their oxygen mask, that there had been enough time with the airplane still in control for the mask to deploy and for someone to reach up and put it on. And it remained on as they crashed to the ground. Now, that's remarkable because, first of all, if the airplane is blown up by a missile, the masks don't deploy, and there's nobody, just the overall circumstance in the airplane, it would immediately be tumbling, and the G-forces would make it impossible for anyone to be, the masks aren't even going to fall. The G-forces are going to pin them in place. They're going to be tangled. No one's going to be able to reach up. You wouldn't have the coordination to be able to put one on. And if in fact the airplane was immediately blown to pieces, that's the last thing you're thinking about is, gee, why don't I put on this mask when the ceiling of the aircraft and the floor of the aircraft and the walls of the aircraft and the seat are all flying in a million different directions? Yeah, where are you going to get the oxygen? You know, that one tube is just going to restrict your ability to breathe. So that didn't make any sense. That suggested that there was a problem, that that perhaps bullet holes and the aircraft began to decompress, but the decompression wasn't so violent and the destruction of the airframe wasn't so violent that it caused an immediate blowing up of the aircraft and the asymmetrical forces. Then the Russians said that they have intelligence reports of a military aircraft in proximity of that 777. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the information that has been made available to us on Malaysian Airlines MH Flight 17 that was crashed over the eastern Ukraine, trying to figure out what may have happened. You know, one of the things that I always enjoy doing is no matter the circumstance, I like to look at the available evidence and to see with the evidence that is available, if you can form reasonable conclusions based upon the evidence. And so I've been sharing some insights with you regarding this crash that are highly inconsistent with the American story, which, of course, wants to blame everything on Putin. Hello, Glenn. Do you have an angle or an insight or a different take on what may have happened?
Well, a couple things we know. You, being a pilot, certainly know this. We know several things just from the altitude of the aircraft at the time of the attack.
30,000 feet or 33,000? Somewhere in that range.
Somewhere in there, cruising altitude, right?
Right.
Well above, you know, no breathable oxygen up there.
Well, it's not that there's no breathable oxygen. Your useful consciousness at 30,000 feet. Yeah, it's probably, for someone, you know, unaccustomed, you guys can climb Mount Everest, and they've done it without bottled oxygen, it's 29,000 feet. You have about a minute of useful consciousness at 30,000 feet. By the time you get to 40, where some of, like my airplane will actually cruise at 41, at 41, your useful consciousness is a matter of probably 10 to 15 seconds. But if you're really on your game, yeah, if you're really on your game. Yeah, if you're really on your game at 30,000 feet and you know what's happening, you react to it immediately, you've got somewhere between, let's say, a minimum of 30, depending on your health, and a maximum of about 60 seconds to get some oxygen, or you are off into a hypoxia land.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the Challenger incident where they found some thing on the back of the one of the seats activated, you know, as the
yes.
Challenger that was coming down. But
yeah.
We know for sure that you know, they couldn't breathe too well too long, that's for sure.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah, from the time I wake up, my normal daily useful consciousness is about 15 seconds. So we know for sure that it wasn't a ground-based, you know, auto 50 cal, truck-mounted 50 cal that hit it at 30,000 feet. Not even on the best of days with laser sights, right? Could that even be possible? So this was an aircraft.
That is correct. Yeah, that is correct. That at 30,000 feet, you're not taking a truck-mounted 50-caliber machine gun and bringing down that. I mean, is it possible? Yeah, but with what are the odds? And this was a situation with the photograph that I saw of the panel that was being shown for, this is the incident panel. I mean, they were saying, this panel shows what happened to this aircraft. You know, over a 4-foot by 3-foot panel, there may have been 50 round holes in it. You're not going to get 50 holes in any panel that size with two side-by-side mounted 50 cals from the ground. That is, you are absolutely correct. The odds against that are 1 in a billion.
And I bet you the size of the holes is very consistent with about 20-millimeter, you know, cannons that would be mounted on most aircraft. I think most of them, I think, don't they use about 20-mil cannons?
They vary. They vary, depend on the aircraft, anywhere, you know, some.
That's a wonderful thing, because if they can dependably determine the caliber of the holes, they can narrow down the type of aircraft.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But the theory, the Russian theory was that the airplane was brought down by a Ukrainian military airplane, and then the whole thing was set up to have the world turn against the ethnic Russians and then against Russia itself, and that it was actually brought down deliberately, as opposed to accidentally, was the Russian take on the whole thing. Now, Glenn, all we have here is 3 bits of evidence. The panel that has the round holes in it, which is pretty incriminating. The Russian testimony, which, you know, I have no idea whether or not it's credible or not. And the oxygen mask being worn by the passenger.
Well, since we're doing talk radio, let's not forget the conspiracy theories. They're really best the conspiracy theories to muddy the waters and pull you in the well and make things.
Okay, well, in this case, I think conspiracy theories are reasonable. Just depends on the theory, of course.
Well,
are reasonable because there is no definitive explanation here that you can't just go to Occam's razor and say, you know, the simplest explanation is the best explanation. So I'm open to conspiracy theories. What do you got?
Okay, wow, I have to step away from some noise.
Okay, we've got the music playing, Glenn. Why don't we pick up your best conspiracy or two after the break? In this particular case, I'm actually game to hear them, because so long as they're not chemtrails. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Glenn, you were going to share with us, this is rare for this program since I am not a fan of conspiracy theories, but on the MH17 flight that brought down over the Donetsk area, I'm all ears. I'm open to hear what you have.
I think we might have visited this one before when it first emerged, as I recall. But now the allegation is of Israeli-based fighters from Azerbaijan, rented air bases in Azerbaijan. That was one of the theories that had been floated.
And other than the conspiracy theorists who typically are anti-Semitic and hate Jews, what would be the motivation of the Jews to do this?
This somehow ties into additional allegations of a supposed Malaysia Airlines plane, again, that's the 777 type thing, in an Israeli hangar somewhere, that's been kept for a while to be This type of, and also with the Malaysian one that disappeared over the Indian Ocean. And so I think you're eventually going to hear that this is has to do with some sort of Israeli vendetta against Malaysia because of the outspokenness of Mahathir, you know, the previous prime minister. So that's one of the best ones.
Okay, I would give you a million times better odds that somebody with a handheld 50 caliber machine gun who was nearsighted and decrepit managed to put that tight pattern in the side of the airplane's skin at 30,000 feet over that theory. In fact, I would say that theory has a 0%. I always find it entertaining that there's so many people that like to blame the or credit the Mossad with everything. They are the go-to guys when there's mayhem in the world. But we're not going without.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at, do you have another theory, or I'm going to tell you?
No. That's like there's some money in the water, poisoning of the well type stuff that's designed to distract them from getting confused.
Yeah. Well, that's not it. I always look at who gained and who lost. And those who lost very seldom are the perpetrators. Those who gained are very often the perpetrators. It's the old line, follow the money. So if you follow the money in this case, who lost? The Russians. The Americans were having trouble selling their sanctions because Europe is dependent on Russian gas. And also, Russian-European trade is very important, particularly recognizing that that Europe is still mired in a rather nasty recession. And so the French and the Germans and the Italians really didn't want to go around, didn't want to support the Cold War sanctions that the Obama nation wanted to impose on Russia. So lo and behold, this airplane is shot down. America, the Obaminator, actually says that it was a Russian anti-aircraft battery that shot it down, that we have proof that that occurred, and that the Russians were operating it, and therefore the Putin administration is a mass murderer of terrorists, of civilians. Now, did he use those words? No, but that was his implication in his speech, was that this was a Russian anti-aircraft battery operated by Russians, and it deliberately shot down this aircraft. And based upon them being murderous and the U.S. being able to demonstrate that it was the Russians being murderous, that the sanctions needed to be hugely increased on Russia, and they were. Now, of course, the United States hasn't produced one shred of evidence. And there is a 0% possibility, just as there's no possibility it was the Mossad, there's a 0% possibility that it was that the Russians drove that thing into the Ukraine with Russian operators with the intent to bring down a civilian airliner on Putin's instructions. I mean, the American scenario has a 0% chance of being the truth. And yet, if you follow the money, America used it to further its Cold War ambitions against Russia, and the worst of the sanctions were imposed based upon that ridiculous scenario.
Well, we're back to Cold War vilification of the Russians, the best enemies money can buy. Also, this morning, a similar incident going on, and I'm hearing Obama is recommending that the U.S. pause its offensive bioweapons research program. And out of another quarter, we have someone else alleging that the Ebola could be a Russian bioweapon. So whether it's plane shot down, news.
Oh, you're kidding. So our propagandists are now suggesting that at least it's not the Mossad this time, that Ebola is the Ebola outbreak in Liberia, which Russia has no involvement with, Guinea, which Russia has no involvement, and Sierra Leone, also which Russia has no involvement, is a Russian plot that rather than Ebola, which naturally emanates out of Central Africa, being a natural phenomenon, being passed on either through monkeys or bats to the human population and spread by human contact. No, it's a bioweapon by the Ruskies, and by God, we better put more sanctions on them.
Well, the notion of it being a bioweapon isn't absurd to me, but as a Russian bioweapon, it sort of is. I think humanity has fought microbes through all of its existence and is now attempting to recruit them as allies in warfare.
There is no question whatsoever that that Liberia is a living hellhole. You know, it has been a hellhole for a long time. And Liberia, in terms of its culture, is not much better than the Ukraine. And so would it be plausible that that one of the warring parties in Liberia would have perpetrated Ebola on the other as a political weapon? Yes, but in the general population, no. And is it the most likely explanation? No. But would it be an outside force operating in Liberia and Sierra Leone and Guinea? Not a chance. So that's not plausible. I would say, though, that the Obaminators claim that America is going to pause its chemical and biological weapons research is pretty revolting. That means that America is continuing to invest taxpayers' money to create weapons that kill biologically and chemically. And that's reprehensible. I don't want my money or my government developing weapons that kill biologically and chemically. I just don't.
Right. Yeah, it's just pathetic. And
it is.
It's another one of these Frankenstein monster stories where, oh, well, we can control it. Right.
You know, how do we go and say, you know, we're going to go bomb Damascus because Assad crossed a red line and gassed his people, and when we are developing chemical and biological weapons, and why do we justify invading Iraq based upon Saddam Hussein gassing the Kurds when we supplied the gas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we love hypocrisy. Like, we're just flaming with hypocrisy.
We're the Ebolites of hypocrisy. You know, our hypocrisy is as deadly as Ebola. Everything it touches, it corrodes, it corrupts, it kills.
Yeah,
including the nation's ability to think. It is a sad situation.
Right. Well, I suppose I should be going. All right. Well, it was interesting. My guess on the plane would be Ukrainian, you know, fighter aircraft and air cannon fire.
Normally I would not go to a position like that if it wasn't for the fact that the Ukrainian regime is revoltingly dishonest, and they are savage. Like right now, they're still at the Donetsk airport. They signed a referendum giving a total liberty to to Luhansk and Donetsk, and then they're controlling with their military the Donetsk airport with their military. And continuing to wage the war, even though their parliament voted in favor of giving them liberty. And this is a regime that you know that every time they open their mouth, they're lying. I mean, literally every time. And so it is a regime that is revolting enough, a culture of people disgusting enough, that they would do this. They would absolutely do it and think nothing of it. I mean, as I say, the two most gruesome acts in the Holocaust both took place in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you look at the landscape there, and you also look at the involvement of the American CIA with the Kiev regime, this is absolutely something that the CIA would do and think, ha-ha, we're back fighting the Cold War. So,
It was a great ruse then. It's a great ruse now. We fed them all through the Cold War. U.S. and Canada fed Russia all through the Cold War with their wheat. So, you got to have the best enemies money can buy.
Yeah, there's that book by Sutton. Sutton's book called The Best Enemy Money Can Buy is actually about the Vietnam War. And
right.
What Sutton demonstrates in the Vietnam War, he was an engineer. And what he demonstrated, and it's a really serious book, you know, Sutton is a favorite of conspiracy theorists, but the fact is, I've read the book. It's a very well researched, a very serious book. And what Sutton did is he investigated the serial numbers and the machine marks on the weapon systems that were used to kill the 57,000 Americans in Vietnam. Now, while he can't get his hands on all of them, he was able to investigate and trace thousands of machine parts from weapon systems. And between the serial numbers and the machine parts of those weapon systems, he was not only able to track them back to the Soviet Union, but track them back to the United States. That in virtually every case, the weapon systems that were used in Vietnam were designed by American companies, deliberately shipped to the Soviet Union, and transferred from the Soviet Union to Vietnam. And so the Viet Cong that we were fighting that killed 57,000 Americans in Vietnam were firing American weapons. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Dateline is Kabul, Afghanistan. Hundreds of angry faces. Signs, fist pumping, and cries of Allahu Akbar, punctuated with shouts of death to America. Last week's demonstrations in Kabul showed just how fragile Afghanistan is. Now, here's a country, America's longest war. In fact, we just took Camp Leatherneck and one other American base, and we just turned them over to the Afghan army. You know, here's a country that America invaded back in the fall of 2001, and we're still there. And we've got nothing but disasters to show for our effort. Nothing. The Taliban is as strong as the Taliban has ever been. The drug crop is larger than it has ever been. Women are abused more frequently than they have ever been. The government is more corrupt than probably any government in the world. Money laundering is extraordinarily common there. It is it's a horrible place. It was a bad place when we invaded, and we made a bad place worse. Well, the shouts of death to America and Allahu Akbar are a result of an editorial. It's the sign that the Afghan new president, Ashraf Ghani, must overcome if he wants to move his country forward. How are you going to move a country like that forward? It's like every is majority Islamic country. They're mired in the 7th century. Yeah, some of them, because of OPEC, have some fancy new buildings that were designed and built by Western enterprise. But they're all mired in the 7th century. You're not going to move that country forward. I mean, we've blown it backwards over the last 13 or 14 years. Those obstacles, this article says, are not limited to the knee-jerk fanaticism of a few hundred protesters. The architects of this particular crisis can be found inside of the new prime minister's National Unity Government. Yeah, it was the National Unity Government of Afghanistan that was holding the protest, screaming Allahu Akbar, which means that Allah, the God of Islam, is greater than any other God, and death to America. The overt reason for the outpouring of negative emotion in Afghanistan last week was a small article in an obscure English language newspaper published nearly 2 weeks ago, and almost no one in Afghanistan actually read it. It doesn't take much to trip the trigger of an enraged Muslim. The Afghanistan Express, never heard of it, which bills itself as the voice of a more hopeful generation, is a small publication that is distributed to foreign embassies, NGOs, entrepreneurs, and tourists in Afghanistan. It's not even targeted to Afghani individuals, none of whom much resemble the protesters gathered in the mosque or at Kabul University on Friday, the central mosque. The author, who calls himself A.J. Ahwar, is not known in Afghanistan's journalistic circles, as if there are journalists in Afghanistan. He and his wife, who is also an Afghan-born journalist, are currently living in the Netherlands, where they are seeking asylum. Death to America. The author of this article is a Afghani. And he's writing from the Netherlands. The article in question, The Islam of the Taliban and the Islamic State, is a cry de couleur against a God unwilling or unable to curb evil in the world. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. You know, it's so the tact of the article was to say, well, since the Taliban and the Islamic State both claim to be fundamentalist Islamic organizations and are, then why is their God either unwilling or unable to curb the very violence they are perpetrating? Interesting, huh? Interesting. It's kind of a logical conundrum. If they're the most fundamental Muslim organizations, what is it about their God that causes their God to perpetrate such egregious acts of terror? So what type of God are you? Are you insane? You, God, are not understandable. I might leave you alone in the sky.